What a privilege to be with you on Sabbath morning here at Wantirna. I've got to say, it's when Yoshi invited me to come, it was a number of months ago, and I didn't know that he was going to desert us all and go over to South Australia. He'll do a great job over there. I think Yoshi will do a good job wherever he goes. And I understand that next week is an opportunity that you have to have him with you and actually farewell him as he officially goes. And I guess he's been trying to do two things at once, and God bless him for that, but I think it's been a big ask. But we've enjoyed having him on our team here in Victoria, and I know you've enjoyed having him as your pastor as well. So tremendous thing to be here. How many people are going to be involved in Road to Bethlehem? Can I see your hand? Let me just say to you, well done, and thank you for what you do, and thank you for what is done year on year, year in, year out, end of each year, it's there, isn't it? And what a tremendous witness that is to let people know about Jesus. I want to share with you some things today, because you might have heard of Harvest Victoria. You remember we had John Bradshaw come and share with us. That was part of Harvest Victoria. It was a five-year initiative to do something to make a difference here in Victoria, particularly in Melbourne. We've had more recently, we've been involved in planting new churches, and even through COVID times, we've had new churches coming together. And by the way, it's so good. I mean, we've had times when we couldn't even meet at church, but we're here today. And I just want to say thank you for coming. And to those who are watching online, let me invite you to come to church in person really soon. You may not be well, or there might be some other circumstances. We understand, but we love to have people with us in person. And that's one of the things that I want to share with you now, because Harvest Victoria was a five-year initiative which finishes this month. So what's next? Well, Connect. Have you heard of this? Have you seen this logo? Connect is what's next. It's already started. There is a merging of Harvest Victoria and Connect for 1 year. And so Connect is basically an infinity symbol which represents a cycle of evangelism. And this is an invitation for every church right across Australia, not just for Victoria, but right across Australia, for churches to be involved. And we have been involved. You can see there are suggestions as what might be able to happen from 1 year to the next. And these are just ideas, and there are other things that can be added to that. But basically, in summary, 2022 has been a year to reconnect with people who have part of who we are, who may not have been able to come back to church. We want to regroup and reconnect. Of course, connection with Jesus is at the forefront of this. It's right at the very beginning of it. And then the next thing that we are... Oh, I skipped. 2023 is a time for other projects as we connect with the community. Now, I don't want you to take these things on the screen or things that have been shared absolutely literally, because if you do, you'll notice this year we're going to pray for people and we're never going to do it again. That isn't going to be how it is. These things are just suggestions. These are like, the idea is the headline, and it's how we choose to fill it in individually and as churches around Australia and around Victoria. And then in 2024, there is a year of evangelism has been set for that year. Now, that's right across Australia. I think every year is a year of evangelism in a sense. Every year is a year to reach new people and to bring new people to know Jesus. And but 2024 is a year to focus on that in a special way. And 2025, a year for training and nurture and getting ready to start the cycle again. And so those are things that will be resourced and provided along the way. But there's something that I became aware of very recently that I want to share with you. And this is happening in 2025. And the concept is right around Australia. This comes to us from It Is Written or The Incredible Journey. You might know of Pastor Gary Kent, and he came and met with us just not last week, but the week before, and he shared this concept with us. Did you know that a little Citroen, just like that one, was the first car to drive right around Australia? You might have seen it written up in a little book written by Amanda Buse, and the name of the car was Bubsy. So in 1925, this little Citroen was the first car to make it around Australia. And the reason that is significant to us as Seventh-day Adventists is because the guy who was driving it was an Adventist. And he decided that he wanted to take special literature right around Australia and sell it and give it away, or however he did it. And so he drove that car right around Australia, and he did it for a period. It took him about a year to do it. His name was Neville Westwood. And Neville took on the dream that he had and decided to take that, and the car made it right around Australia. That car is displayed by the Citroen company now. And there's a display at the in Canberra at the museum there. And so I don't know what happened yet. But the plan that there is includes taking a similar car to this one right around Australia. And here's where we come in, because there's an opportunity potentially to have that car come to your church. Because Gary, they've actually got two cars. So there are going to be two going side by side or whatever, which gives an opportunity to host an event where that car can come. And you, I can just imagine, I mean, as they go around, they're going to be posting on social media about the journey that they're undertaking. I can imagine people who are car enthusiasts, vintage car enthusiasts, could be interested to come and have a look at a little car like that that has made its way around Australia. I don't know what month it will be, but I do know that it'll be coming to Melbourne. And so I just wanted to share that with you, and there'll be more information about that as time goes on. So there are some good things happening, and there will be not only the social media advertising of the event and the things that are going on, but they will make a TV program out of that as well, and that'll be shared, I'm sure, with It Is Written. And I just wanted to share that with you because this is a pretty unique event, and I do believe that we can be a part of it. I want to ask you, what do I hold in my hand? I heard people murmur, the Bible. Can you do better than that? What do I hold in my hand? Yeah, I wasn't asking for louder. I was asking for a different description. How else would you describe it? Okay, the Word of God. Anything else? Thank you, a map for life. What's the first word? You may not be able to read it from where you are, but you know what it says there. Holy is the first word. Do you understand holy? Yeah, that means it kind of belongs to God. That's a very brief summary. The second word, Bible, do you know what that means? That happens to be a Greek word. Now, if it said Biblos, that would be the Greek word for book. And so it would say this is the holy book. But Bible is the plural of the Greek word for book. So this, folks, is the holy books. There was a little girl who picked up a Bible for the very first time, and she had just been learning to write. And she looked and she turned the pages one after another, and she looked up at the person who had given it to her to hold. And she looked very carefully into their eyes and said, "Did you say this is God's book?" They said, "Yes." She said, "Doesn't he write neat?" So today I want to explore a little with you about the scriptures. Let me ask you, do Do you reckon this book is true? I figure that you probably wouldn't be here today if you didn't, but I want to explore something else with you today, and so let's get into it because the clock is ticking. First of all, the Bible tells us that without faith, it is impossible to please God. And so we need to have faith. We need to trust him. We need to believe if we're going to please God. But my question is, have you ever been tempted to doubt? Have you ever wondered whether everything here is really as it seems? I can remember a friend a friend of Marcia's. She joined an art class when we were living in Fiji. And this lady was a non-believer, totally a non-believer. But she became aware that Marcia does believe in the scripture, and she did back then too. This lady had been handed a copy of the scriptures when she was still at school. She had been to the science classes. She had learned about evolution. She picked up a Bible and she started reading from Genesis chapter 1, and she got stuck right there because she said, this is not a scientific book. Couldn't be true. And she got stuck. I don't know whether any of you have sat in science classes or philosophy classes or other places, whether at university or at school or some other place, or watched on television the views that have been presented that are different to what is in here in terms of what this stands for. And if you haven't, well, I can tell you I have. Have I ever been tempted to doubt? Yes, I have. Is it really true? I mean, this book tells a story. It tells the story of Jesus. And that's a wonderful story. We've got Road to Bethlehem this week, celebrating the birth of our Saviour. But let me ask you, if you were at high school or the early years of university and a teenage girl who you know said, look, I'm going to have a baby. You said, who's the father? Oh, no, no, there is no man involved. Would you believe her? Yeah, I've heard of other ways of doing things. A teenage girl going looking for those medical answers? I don't think so. Would you believe her? Chances are we probably would say there's a man there somewhere. A young man, an older man, whoever it is, you're hiding, you're protecting them. There's a story like that in this book, and we're celebrating it with Road to Bethlehem this week. Do you believe it? Why? Why would you believe something like that? Let me share this with you. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. There was a little lady who wrote these words. Those who desire to doubt will have plenty of room. God does not propose to remove all occasion for unbelief. He gives evidence which must be carefully investigated with a humble mind and a teachable spirit, and all should decide from the weight of evidence. God gives such a sufficient evidence for the candid mind to believe. Did you get that? In other words, a thinking person, an educated person, can believe. And by the way, you may be interested to know that from a study that's been done recently, it is very clear that the level of education among Seventh-day Adventists in Victoria is quite a bit higher on average than the general population. I found that interesting. So God does give us evidence. And I want to share some of it with you today because I don't know about you, I have had in my life some of those times that have been pretty tough. I've faced some things that I wasn't sure which way was the right way to go from where I was, and I wasn't sure whether God was real and whether I would be able to hang on to my faith. That's not where I am today, but it is where I have been. And if you have ever been in that situation, if you have ever had doubts, if you've ever had questions that seem to be unanswered, if church doesn't seem to always get it right, there are some people who say some things which don't necessarily line up according to what I'm learning at uni or in some other place. I want to share with you today this. What I'm sharing are the reasons that I hung on by a thread. It was a number of years ago, but I still maintain my faith and belief in Jesus. And I want to share with you why. Back in World War II, there was a man by the name of David Greenglass, and he was a traitor. He gave away secrets that he shouldn't have shared, and conspirators helped him by planning a meeting. He needed a passport to be able to continue the work that he was wanting to do, and there were six prearranged signs for him to meet somebody and to be able to get that passport. So here are the signs. He had to go to Mexico City and write a note and sign his name, I, Jackson. Now, it wasn't his name, but that's what he had to sign. After 3 days, he had to go to the Piazza de Colón in Mexico City and stand before the statue of Columbus, which you can see on the screen, and with his middle finger in a guidebook, think about it. I would put my thumb in there or my first finger, his middle finger. That's kind of a bit unusual, I would think. He had to put his middle finger in the guidebook, and when he was approached, he was to say what a magnificent statue it was and that he was from Oklahoma. And at that point, the secretary was going to give him the passport because they considered that these six signs would not be counterfeited and could not be counterfeited because nobody else would know. And so these six prearranged signs worked because it was impossible, they considered, to fake those things. But with Jesus, according to this book, there are 456 signs that Jesus is the Messiah. There are 456 identifying characteristics which were predicted not just a week or two ahead like it was with David Greenglass, but they were predicted hundreds of years ahead. Now, I wonder what the probability was that those things would be fulfilled. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 1 tells us, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Well, the New Testament authors rely on two characteristics, two areas of the life of Christ to establish that Jesus is the Messiah. First, the resurrection. And second, the fulfilled Old Testament prophecies. Jesus himself was one who used these signs. This is what he said, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them the things concerning himself in the scriptures. Do you remember that story? It's when they were on the road to Emmaus and Jesus was walking with them and they didn't recognize him. They didn't know who he was. And so he opened the Bible and shared with them those things to help them to understand that who Jesus really was. Here's another one. And this time it is Jesus talking. And in John chapter 5 and verse 39 and 40, he says to them, you search the scriptures, talking to the leaders of the Jewish nation, because you think that in them you have eternal life, and it is these that bear witness of me. And you are unwilling to come to me that you may have life. And so today, I want to share with you just a few of the prophecies that there are. I'm not going to go through all 456. And I'm not going to read every verse that's on the screen. If you want to keep a record of it, you can take a photo of the screen, or you can ask the guys up there who've got my PowerPoint. They can share it with you, and that's quite okay. But there are just 10 signs that I'm going to show you, 10 prophecies. And on one side, you will see the prophecy, and on the other side, the fulfillment. You see what I mean? Here's the first one. The prophecy was that Jesus would be born of a virgin. Okay, you can see the prophecy there in Isaiah 7 and the fulfillment there in Matthew chapter 1. I'm going to move fairly quickly because of the time that we have. And you know, one of the things that I reckon is really good about Sabbath? Lunch. And I don't want to keep you from that. So let's just keep moving. There's the first one. And by the way, what's the chance of that being fulfilled? Second one, Jesus would be the Son of God. And you can see the prophecy there and the fulfillment of that prophecy. And here are a few more. The Old Testament prophecies on the left and the fulfillment on the right. Jesus would be from the seed of Abraham, so he would be from that line. The son of Isaac, the son of Jacob, he would be from the tribe of Judah. He would be from the family of Jesse. From the house of David, he would be presented with gifts. Do you remember the wise men came? How many wise men were there? You're a bit smarter than some places. When I've asked that other places, they say, well, there were three gifts, but we don't know how many wise men there were. But we know there were wise men. And we know that Herod killed the children. And so what is the probability that those things would be fulfilled in the life of one person? If I had a coin here and I planned on bringing one, but they rattle around in my pocket and I don't carry coins much. But if I had a coin in my hand and I flipped it, what would be the chance that I would get heads? One chance in two, right? Pretty simple. That's probability. So we understand that. There was a professor. His name was Peter Stoner. And he decided to calculate the probability of one man fulfilling just 8 of the major prophecies regarding Jesus, regarding the Messiah. Now, he was a professor of science at Westmont, and so he worked it out with 12 different classes. He had about 600 students. Do you think all of those students in his science classes were believers? No, they were not. And the students considered all of the factors. They discussed the prophecies at length and examined the circumstances and any potential conspiracies. And they evaluated and made conservative estimates. And then even the most skeptical of the students agreed with the process that was being followed to try to evaluate what would be the probability that these things would be fulfilled in the life of one man. You can see he didn't finish there. He went on and made the estimates even more conservative. He encouraged other skeptics and other scientists to look at it. Finally, he submitted his figures for review to a committee of the American Science Affiliation, and they carefully examined his work. What would be the probability that just 8 of those prophecies about Jesus would be fulfilled in the life of one man? 1 in 10 to the power of 17. What's that number? It's not a million. It's not a billion. Is it a trillion or is it more than that? See, it's a big number. And I want you to understand what this means. Well, first of all, maybe you have a super fund, you know, and they could say to you, you can choose which area to invest in. You can have, you know, you can invest in shares, you can invest in property, you can invest in some other thing. It's important to look after your superannuation, right? or your other money, and somebody comes along and says, here's another investment, you will get an enormous return with heavenly results out of this world. But there's one chance in 10 to the power of 17 that you're going to get a result. Will you invest in it? Nobody would in their right mind. Nobody would. And here's the good news. That was the chance that these prophecies would be fulfilled in the life of one man. And they were. Not because of probability, not because of chance, but because God was guiding the events of history and had predicted them ahead of time. I want you to understand what that actually means. If you were to take that number of coins, for one thing, if they were $1 coins, you'd be a very rich person. The other thing that is explained where I read about this, and I'm ever so glad that I knew these things before I hit the troubled times of my faith, the most troubled times. But if you take that number of coins and lay them all face down across the state of Victoria, cover the whole state of Victoria, that's not that number. If you double them up, that's not that number. If you keep going until they're a metre deep, that is still not that number of coins. If you go until it's 2 metres deep across the total state of Victoria, that's the number of coins, roughly. And if we were to say to you, okay, one of those coins has an X marked on it, you have one chance, blindfolded, to go and pick up that coin. That's the chance that those prophecies would be fulfilled in the life of one man. In other words, there is a reason to believe. And when my faith was hanging on by a thread, for some reason I thought about this, what I'm sharing with you today. And I thought, okay, so there is a reason. I cannot maintain my intellectual honesty and integrity and dismiss Jesus. I can't do that. And I thought, okay. And I realized, and I'd read this before as well, that there is more evidence, there are more eyewitness accounts of Jesus who lived and died, and eyewitness accounts of Jesus, the resurrected Jesus. There are more of those than there are that Napoleon walked this earth. There's more evidence for Jesus than there is for Napoleon. And do you know anybody in their right mind who questions whether Napoleon was an historical figure? I don't. And so on the basis of the evidence, I said, okay, let me hang on to Jesus. I now have something sure and certain. Let me read from the Word of God. And I started with the Gospels. And my question, how does Jesus want me to live? How does Jesus want me to live? What does he say to do? You know what? Jesus didn't say to do very much. There are 3 big things for Jesus. Justice, which has to do with how we treat others. Mercy, which has to do with how we treat others, to being kind to them. And the third thing for Jesus was faith. So it had the big things for Jesus were our relationships with others and our relationship with God. When I started reading from the scriptures and just reading the gospel story, I saw that Jesus went to church on Sabbath. Effectively, he went to the synagogue. Good. I hadn't stopped going to church, but I had been wondering about it. I said, if I'm going to do what Jesus did, I'll be in church every week. I'll be looking for the second coming of Jesus because he talked about coming again. And so on. And I just found once I had Jesus first and foremost for my faith, the teachings from the scriptures, as we understand them, made sense. I've only talked about the probability of eight of those prophecies being fulfilled. But I want you to believe and I want you to know that no matter what your journey with God is like right now, whether it's on a high or whether it's on a low or whether it's just sort of muddling along, there is a reason for every intelligent thinking person to believe. And it's not just because the prophecies have been fulfilled. Jesus lived and he died and he rose again. But you know, the biggest reason for me now as to why I believe is because Jesus makes a difference in my life. Don't know if I ever told you about a guy, a friend who, I guess I would probably describe him as a bit of a New Age guru. And we were talking about life and various things. And he said to me, what difference does it make for you to believe in God? I just smiled and I said, he gives me hope. He gives me strength to carry on through the tough times. He gives me something to look forward to for the future. He gives me courage. He gives me, and as I was talking, he kind of almost stopped me in my tracks. And I said, I don't know how people get on who don't know God. And he said to me, words that shocked me. I didn't expect him to say this. He said, they don't. They don't get on. That's why they turn to alcohol and drugs and other at-risk behaviours, because they don't have what you have. I thought, wow. And I should have been quick enough to say, do you have it? But I'm asking you today, because if you're unsure and if you don't, let me encourage you to hang on. Because the faith journey is not always a smooth one. I've shared with you this much of my story, and you don't want to know the rest right now, because it's already after 12 o'clock, for one thing. And apart from that, why would you want to know? Because your story, that's the one that's important. Your story with Jesus, your connection with him, Jesus makes a difference in my life today. I had the privilege of being a missionary in Fiji for 6 years. The area that what we had to work in was then called the Central Pacific. It included French Polynesia and the Cook Islands, Samoa, the two Samoas, Tonga, Fiji, Tuvalu, Niue, and probably and Pitcairn Island, which I never did manage to get to. I had to visit those places two or three times a year for a week or 10 days or 2 weeks. Someone has to do the tough stuff in ministry, if you know what I mean. But I was out of my bed for 180 nights a year for 6 years. And I paid tribute to Marcia for doing so well with our family when I just wasn't there, because it was when I was away, that's when the car broke down, and so on. And so, you know how it goes. One of the last trip that I took away, Marcia was able to come with me. Her mum came out and looked after our kids, and we went to this place. In the Cook Islands, there are two main islands. One is Rarotonga, the other, Aitutaki. Aitutaki, it's a tropical island, and as with many tropical islands, it is surrounded by a reef. On the reef, there are little islands that have grown up like this one. This one is called One Foot Island. It's not called One Foot Island because of the shape. It's because of the story. Let me tell it to you quickly. The water in the lagoon surrounding the island is divided up, probably to this day, into fishing areas for each of the villages. One day, many years ago, some of the villagers looked out and they saw a canoe with two men in it, and they said, "Those guys are fishing in our territory. Let's go and get them." And so they got on their war paint and they got in their war canoe and they went out, and these guys, father and son, saw them coming. And they said, "We better get out of here, let's go." And so they paddled as fast as they could and they said, "Where will we go to where we can hide?" And they went to One Foot Island. It was not called One Foot Island then, but it is now because of what happened that day. They went, they pulled up their canoe, and the father said to the son, "Walk in front of me, and I will cover your footprints with mine." And he did. And they came to a tree, a very good tree for a place of hiding. And they said, father said to the son, "You go up the tree and hide, and I will continue." And he did, and he went and hid. When the warriors arrived at the island, they got out of their canoe and they said, "Here is their canoe, but there's only one set of footprints in the sand," which is why they call it One Foot Island. There's only one set of footprints. There were two men, but there's one set of footprints. What is going on? And they went and searched the island. They followed those footprints. They found the father and killed him. He died for his son. They never found the son. But it does remind me of Jesus. My footprints are covered with his. My life is covered with his. My clothing is covered with his robe of righteousness. Not because of me, but because of him. And that's true for you too, as you put your faith and trust in him. Sometimes we can feel like we're not good enough, and I know I'm not. but I know he is. Today, let me point you to Jesus.